Now, some of you might be surprised to hear me say that was the Buddhist dawn in the West. But that is literally the truth. You might be thinking, well, it wasn't there Buddhism before that. Wasn't there Buddhism before the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order, before the Western Buddhist Order in the West? Well, in a sense, there was. But again, in a sense, there wasn't. There hadn't really been a Buddhist dawn in the West. There'd been perhaps, say, a Theravada dawn in the West. There'd been perhaps a Zen dawn in the West. But there hadn't really been, we may say, a Buddhist dawn in the West, because whatever of Buddhism was propagated, taught, was Buddhism according to the teachings of one particular school, one particular tradition. Buddhism as such, the Dharma as such, was not really taught, not really transmitted at all. And this is why we call ourselves, and while we emphasize the fact that we call ourselves the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order. We're just a Buddhist order. We're not a Theravada order. We're not a Zen order. We're not a Vajrayana order. We're not even a Tantric order. We're just a Buddhist order. Plain and simple. And we're a Buddhist order and a Buddhist movement in another sense too. We're a Buddhist order and a Buddhist movement in the sense that we take, we accept, we have recourse to, we derive inspiration from the whole of the Buddhist tradition, the whole of the Eastern Buddhist tradition. And this is very much the case in the movement. When it comes, say, to reading, when it comes to study of scriptures. Sometimes, as many of you know, you'll find us poring over Pali Buddhist texts of the Theravada tradition. You'll find us going through them word by word, and sometimes referring to the original Pali text. I'm glad to say that quite a few order members and mitras have learned to consult their Pali English dictionary in the course of their studies. This is giving a certain amount of backbone to the study. So yes, we study texts like the Udana, like the Dhammapada, the Sutta Nipata, the Majjhima Nikaya, which are all from the Pali Canon. We derive strength and inspiration from those. But again, we study some of the great sutras of the Mahayana tradition. We study the Sutra of Golden Light. We study the Diamond Sutra. We study the Heart Sutra. We study the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras in general. We study the Vimalakirti Nirdesha. We study the White Lotus Sutra. We study especially the beautiful parables and myths of the White Lotus Sutra. And these are Mahayana sutras belonging to the Mahayana tradition. We derive strength, we derive inspiration from them. And then again, perhaps turning to the Zen tradition, a text which influenced me personally very much in my early days, is one of the most important of all the Zen, or rather Chan texts, the so-called Sutra of Wai Lang, or Hui Ning. This was one of the two texts, the other being the Diamond Sutra, the reading of which made me realize that I was a Buddhist. So this too we study, this too we derive inspiration from, this great Zen or Chan text. Say, for instance, just to give you another example, there is Hakuin's Song of Enlightenment. Hakuin being a great Rinzai Japanese Zen master. I think nearly every person involved with the FWO at some time or other has heard this great Song of Enlightenment recited or read in the context of a puja. So we derive great inspiration from that. And then, turning to Tibetan Buddhism, well, it's difficult to know what not to mention in this connection. We derive inspiration from a work by Geshe Wangyal called The Door of Liberation, from Gampopa's Jewel Ornament of Liberation, then from the Songs of Milarepa. There are many, you know, order members, many mitras in the FWO who take you know, the songs of Milarepa around with them wherever they go, especially on solitary retreat. So we derive guidance, we derive inspiration from all these sources. I think it is the only, well, intelligent approach which is possible. I don't think it is really possible for Buddhists in the West to say, I shall limit myself to the Pali Canon. Only that is the Buddha's teaching. Or I shall limit myself to the Mahayana Sutras. Only they contain the Buddha's real teaching. Or I shall confine myself to Zen literature. That's what it's really all about. The rest isn't worth wasting time on. In the Western Buddhist order, in the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order, we can't possibly adopt that sort of attitude. Eh? We accept the whole Buddhist tradition. We accept all the Buddhist scriptures. That is not to say that we derive inspiration from all of them equally. It's not to say that we even know all of them. But we certainly don't limit ourselves to any particular tradition or any particular set of scriptures. And I think this is becoming increasingly the tendency, not only in the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order, but in other Buddhist movements throughout the West, to recognize and to honor and to derive inspiration from the scriptures and the teachings of all the great schools of traditional Buddhism. And then again, we are Buddhists in the sense that we are just Buddhist. I don't personally believe in trying to mix Buddhism with the teachings of other religions just for the sake of mixing, for the sake of a purely theoretical syncretism. We go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. And that means the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha, the teaching of the Buddha, represents our major source of inspiration. So in the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order, we don't try to produce a sort of mixture of Buddhism and Hinduism, or we don't try to produce a sort of mixture of Buddhism and Christianity. We don't try to produce a sort of mixture of Buddhism and Theosophy, or Buddhism and the teachings of Krishnamurti, or Buddhism and the teachings of Gurdjieff. We are just Buddhist. But when I say that we're just Buddhist, I still don't mean that in a narrow sense, because what does Buddhist mean? What does Buddhism mean? What does the Dharma mean? What is the criterion? And the Buddha has given us himself a very clear criterion. The Dharma is whatever helps the individual to grow and to develop. So if there is something, if there is some teaching in some other tradition, in some other literature, which helps us to grow, which helps us to develop, we are quite free as Buddhists to accept that. But the criterion is that it is in accordance with the Buddha's teaching. So we find some of our friends deriving great inspiration from some of the writings, some of the sayings, let's say, of William Blake. Others from some of the sayings, some of the writings of Goethe. Some again from some of the writings, some of the sayings of Plato. So all of these, we are quite free, as it were, to weave into the Dharma, because in principle, they are part of the Dharma, because they also help us to grow and help us to develop. But how do we know what is going to help us to grow? How do we know what is going to help us to develop? It's not a question, as I said before, of any sort of superficial, purely theoretical syncretism. We refer to our own experience. If we are actually trying to grow, if we are actually making an effort to develop in the direction of enlightenment, well, we shall very quickly find out what helps us to grow in that way and what hinders us. Whether it's a particular teaching or a particular practice and so on. But in order to find this out, we can't find it out in any purely theoretical way. We have to find it out in the context of our own practice, our own spiritual experience. Because you can't really decide what is going to help you to develop spiritually unless you are trying to develop spiritually. It's no use just reading the books and saying, oh yes, I think this will help, oh yes, I think that won't help. You have to actually start living the spiritual life, trying to develop, trying to reach enlightenment, trying at least to become a stream entrant. And only then will you be able to tell what really helps and what doesn't help. Huh? Tell maybe not just by yourself, but in consultation with your spiritual friends. So you can't really apply this criterion unless you try to practice the Buddha's teaching. Unless you commit yourself to the path shown by the Buddha. Unless you commit yourself to the three jewels. So we therefore find that the friends of the Western Buddhist order is not just Buddhist. It's also an order. It's a spiritual community of people committed to the following of the path shown by the Buddha, committed to trying to become as the Buddha was, trying to gain enlightenment, trying, as I said, at least to attain stream entry in this life. So we have not just the friends of the Western Buddhist order, but we have the Western Buddhist order itself, this nucleus, as it were, now nearly 300 of them, of people committed to the Buddha, the Dharma and Sangha, who go for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, and who are making an effort to develop, an effort to grow, an effort to reach enlightenment. And since they are making that effort, since they're trying to grow, they will know what it is helps them in that process. They will know what doesn't help them. So we have the order, the Western Buddhist order, known in India as the Trilokya Bodha Mahasangha, the Sangha, the Buddhist Sangha of the three worlds. Trilokya, by the way, is not actually a Pali word, it's a Sanskrit word. The Pali equivalent will be Tiloka. And in case those who heard the talks that made up the symposium early on, I'm a bit puzzled by this three world business. Let me just offer a few words of explanation. What are these three worlds? Well, one can look at it in two ways. This is how I explained it originally in India when we formulated this term. Because clearly we couldn't have just a Western Buddhist order there. Tiloka means the three worlds. So what are these three worlds? There's the Kama Loka, the world of sensuous experience. There's the Rupa Loka, the world of higher, as it were, archetypal experience, with which we come into contact through our meditation and through our experience to some extent of the fine arts. And then beyond that, the Arupa Loka, the so-called formless world of higher, infinitely more refined spiritual experience, beyond which is Nirvana or enlightenment. So the Trilokya, Bodha Mahasangha, is the Sangha, the spiritual community of those people who have committed themselves to the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha, with a view to transcending the Kama Loka, transcending the Rupa Loka, transcending even the Arupa Loka, and gaining enlightenment. They become Trilokya Vijayins, that is to say, conquerors of the three worlds. This is why the Buddha is called Jina, or conqueror. He's conquered the three worlds. He's transcended the mundane, even in its most refined manifestations. He has achieved enlightenment or Buddhahood. So this is the first meaning of Tiloka or Trilokya. The other is more modern, you may say, and more up-to-date, because we've got, in modern parlance, the three worlds. We've got the developed world, we've got the undeveloped world, and in between you've got the developing world. So we are functioning, or we hope to function, in all these worlds. In that world, or those countries which are developed, which are not developed, and which are developing. So we're Trilokya, the movement in India, the Sangha in India, is Trilokya in this sense too. So you might even say that we are Trilokya in traditional spiritual terms, but also in modern secular terms as well. Incidentally, some of us have been thinking that even in the West, this term Western may not be altogether appropriate, so we may be giving consideration to changing it in the future. But that's another story. I'm not going into it now.